Hello, and welcome to show number 2615 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
That hike really was a good way to clear my head, think with my thoughts, and just walk with no expectation other than to get to your destination within 8 to 10 hours or before the sun went down.
And you can all join us this week for an incredible journey.
Known for its centuries-old pilgrimage routes and welcoming waymarkers, El Camino de Santiago offers both challenge and meaning for blind hikers, including Richard Rutta and his sighted hiking partner Tom Lace. We'll talk with them about their hike, cultural encounters, safety strategies, and how teamwork and planning supported their memorable walk. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tips come from both Tom Lace and Richard Rutta.
Learn the value of silence. I think that's a big tip on this trip.
Yeah, and I think, be flexible with your set agenda. Give yourself grace and tact at the end of the day, knowing you did your best. You may have had moments of frustration or moments of uncertainty, but just take it one step at a time and enjoy the Camino and enjoy the experiences that pop up along the way.
It is all about the experience, after all. Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the My Tools for Living retail store at the Chicago Lighthouse, offering tools and technologies to support everyday life across the vision loss spectrum, as well as ongoing advice. More information is available at mytoolsforliving.com.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by meeting Richard and Tom.
Today we have two guests with us, and we'll start with you, Richard, by having you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you for having me. My name is Richard Retha, and I live in Sacramento, California. During my daytime hours, I work for the American Printing House for the Blind. I am blind. I am a guide dog user, and I love to travel the world and am excited to share with you one of our journeys today, walking on the Camino de Santiago. I'm a person who is in his early 50s. I love to travel the world. I love to not be bored. I don't like to be sedentary. And as a blind person, using any and all the tools available to me to get out there, to experience the world, to travel, to touch life in all its forms is awesome. And you've only got one shot at it. So I say seize the moment. And I'm happy to share more about my experiences and Tom's experiences as my hiking partner and friend for over almost 20 years now.
Well, that is a great attitude. So you mentioned Tom, your hiking partner. Tom, how about if you tell people who you are and a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm Tom Lace. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I graduated from work in 2015, and I think 20 years ago I would have been Richard's age. So I'm about 70 right now. But I am also a person that likes to travel and explore the world. I've ridden my bicycle around the world recently and continue to ride my bicycle. And I don't know what exactly happened, but the first time Richard and I met in Costa Rica, I think it was.
Yes.
We hiked. And since then, we have figured out adventures. And it's been quite the journey for me. And the Camino is something I've wanted to do a long time ago, regardless of this one, but I lived in Spain for a while and I just knew all about it. And so this was a great opportunity. And the adventure came out just an amazingly different result than I thought it would, but it's great.
So, Tom, you said, I believe, that you rode your bicycle around the world. Did you actually mean that?
He did.
Yes, I did. Except Antarctica.
That's a pretty long ride.
Well, I did it over the course of about 6 years, but I didn't ride in the ocean, though. That was a little bit hard to do. But no, I've done every continent from Alaska to Chihuahua, from basically the top of Norway to the south of South Africa and across Australia and New Zealand and parts of most of Asia. So it was fun.
And you didn't mention this, but you are the sighted part of this hiking partnership.
That is correct.
How did you guys meet? You said you met in Costa Rica. You live pretty far apart these days. What's your connection?
Yeah, so Tom's brother founded an organization in Minneapolis called Wilderness Inquiry. And Tom and I believe Tom can clarify, but he was partnered with me to be my guide on the Costa Rica trip, Real Wilderness Inquiry, who hosts these outdoor adventures, camping, hiking, canoeing, all those types of activities. And I had participated with that organization many years earlier doing dog sledding and some canoeing in northern Minnesota on the Boundary Waters. And my love for the outdoors led me to Costa Rica, where I met Tom. And through the hiking and the things we did in the jungle and walking on the ocean, Tom was my guide, and we really struck up a friendship and stayed in touch. And we've done five or six big adventures since then.
So, Tom, as you went on to this trip in Costa Rica, was this a trip geared towards people with vision issues, or did this just happen accidentally?
So Wilderness Inquiry was founded in 1976, 77 as part of the ADA when the Park Service could not accommodate for different kind of abilities. And so my brother Greg came up with this idea with my brother-in-law, who's a physician, to say, well, you don't have to build stairways for them. We'll build tour guides or accommodation with tour guides. And so they started off with canoeing, which was pretty easy to do because people could basically be set in a canoe, but then they adventured out to hiking and other kind of things. And they're still around, and they do a lot of things with people of all different abilities. And so oftentimes on these trips, my brother would ask me, or he'd make me pay, but he'd ask me to accommodate somebody, and I would do it. And I've learned so much from doing that.
Oh, I'll bet. So you've had a fair amount of experience with people of all different kinds of abilities.
I'd say so, yeah.
Well, so let's get into hiking the El Camino Trail. Whose idea was that? That's a big, long trail, isn't it?
Yeah, it was, I think, both of ours, to be fair. I think in last May, we hiked in middle of Minnesota, and we kind of struck up a conversation on what's next on that bucket list. And I had tossed out the idea about the Camino, and Tom, I think, quickly took to it, and we kicked it around for a few months with work obligations and needing to renew my passport and looking at all the other travel considerations and advisories and so on and so forth. And I think that's what led us to our trip in October, where we decided that we were going to hike the last 62 miles or 110 kilometers of the Camino de Santiago from Sarria, Spain to Santiago, where you can be considered a pilgrim if you walk that last corridor of the Camino, and that's where we went. And Tom, you want to fill in the blanks or tell more about that, feel free to.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the trail, Tom. So for some people who may not be familiar with the El Camino Trail.
Okay, so basically the El Camino is to a town called Santiago. And Santiago de Compostela is where theoretically the bones of St. James have been interred, in this great big cathedral in the 9th century or something like that. And I think it was in the 9th century is when these pilgrimages would start from basically in France. There's actually different routes to the city itself. So this has been going on for centuries, millennium. And it isn't particularly a religious thing, although you can do it that way. There's all different ways of going and reasons for doing it. And so I'd say I've known about it since 1980s when I lived in Spain, and I did part of it back then. We'll get into it a little later, but the surface of the Camino is not always, you know, a nice super highway or walkway or something like that. It's a lot of varying kind of surfaces. It goes through and meanders through some woods, some old medieval towns. And unfortunately, with the advent of Spain coming in the common market, they built some freeways next to it, which is unfortunate. I'm sure back in 9th century, they didn't have that. But all along the way, there are plenty of, I would call refuges that you can go get coffee, beer, something to eat, sleep, whatever. So it's not a mountainous hike, you know, like a 15-mile hike through, I don't know, the Rockies.
But it is long, and much of it goes through the middle of nowhere.
Correct.
And there are various options. Like some people start in France, some people start in Spain, and they all end up in Santiago.
Correct.
Richard, I'm kind of curious. You had Tom as a guide. Does that mean you didn't take a guide dog, or maybe you took a cane? How did this all work out with you?
The funny thing is my guide dog's name is Italy, and I did not take Italy to Spain. I think had we planned it right, I could have taken Italy to Spain, but we would have had to extend our trip because you really don't want to walk or work a guide dog 10, 12, 15 miles a day, 5 days. That's just not their jam. They're built to work and do things, but I it wouldn't be fair to work a guide dog that much that often. So I elected to just take a white cane and say, let's do it. And then shortly after sunrise on day one, as we were going up the first hill, I realized, you know, the white cane isn't going to cut it for me. And so Tom had hiking poles. So we each took a hiking pole and used that for our trip to use for stamina. And if you're on a trail and you're with someone to give you some general navigation on where, you know, what to avoid, or if there's roots or if there's a big cliff to the left, that's where you avoid. But otherwise, you're using the hiking pole for your stamina and just to tap the ground and to lean into the hill or slow yourself when you walk down the hill, step up and over rocks. That's what really helped, the stamina. I mean, I'm a big, tall guy, and I love to walk, so that wasn't the issue. It's just the issue of getting my balance and getting my bearings, and then, you know, working a verbal system out with Tom where we didn't want the whole experience to be where we were talking all the time. We wanted to be pilgrims where we were there for our own journey. So we had to really come up with maybe there's a path ahead where we can be quiet and listen to the breeze or communicate with others on the trail and have those meaningful, unique, tangible conversations, things that just happen and not everything has to be scripted, or, you know, Tom doesn't have to tell me there's this many steps or this is the elevation. We kind of came up with a system. Wouldn't you agree, Tom, on how we really communicated with that?
Yeah. And that system basically evolved over other hiking trips that we have made. And to be honest with you, I could say, as somebody who sighted, some of those trails were very, very difficult to navigate. We went the Superior Hiking Trail, which is a lot of rocks and a lot of boulders and stuff like that. So having that experience in the past, I think it contributed to the success of this one too.
Well, when we hike, so I'm sighted and Pete's blind, and one of us has to tell the other about what's coming up. You know, we could, like you, have the whole conversation and just be talking about rocks and roots and cliffs the whole time. But that gets tedious. You know, it's much more interesting to just talk with each other. And so we've established a whole lot of nonverbal signals about what to expect that won't interrupt the conversation.
Well, and I'll generally have a sturdy hiking stick in one hand for, as you said, Richard, some of the stability, but it also gives me an idea of how rough the terrain is, where you might want to hold up. And then I also have one hand on Nancy's shoulder, and I'm usually a half a step behind, so I can feel what she's getting into next, so I know what will be coming up for me. So that seems to work pretty well, but it takes some practice.
That's true. I mean, there were times where I was right behind Tom. I had his backpack, the strap on his backpack. If we were going through a narrow passage or down a rough terrain, or we were in a crowd of people. But otherwise, we were apart from each other. We were probably within arm's length or two arm's lengths, but we knew that, you know, we could do this and have this walk. And we met lots of other folks or pilgrims along the way who were, I think, in awe about our journey and how that experience was for both of us. And those are some really cool conversations. And people were, you know, really, I think, engaged and really were happy to see that happening.
So I want to go back to this hiking cane thing that you mentioned earlier. You're used to walking with a guide dog or sometimes with a white cane.
Yes.
But when you switched to using one of Tom's hiking canes, you no longer had an obvious sign on you that you were blind. And Pete has a hiking cane that's as sturdy as a hiking cane, but it's colored like a white cane. And boy, that's great having on a trail, because then everybody else knows he's blind and we don't get into, you know, people expecting us to move over. They all move over. So how did that work out for you?
How did that work out for me, Tom? I think you had more of a visual. I didn't bother me. I didn't see it coming. So, no, I think if we were walking with people, they kind of identified that I was either looking in a certain direction, or sometimes I was holding on to his strap of the backpack. And there are other times where we were just walking wide, and if I had sunglasses on, maybe I wasn't always looking in the right direction. People kind of picked up on that.
I would say that it was a concern for me to see if people would recognize, you know, that Richard was blind, especially if we were walking close to other people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And also the other part was occasionally we had to cross busy roads, or we actually walk in busy roads. And without the white cane, there was no indication to motorists that, you know, something was different here.
Yeah.
So that concerned me. But I think it took only one day of hiking before we kind of nailed that all down. And the key part, Nancy, I'm not sure for you, but for this part of the trip, we've developed a way to be quiet and kind of meditative in our own ways. I had my own reasons for going on this trip, and it was challenging to be verbal or give those signals. So it'd be really interesting to kind of hear about the signals you gave. Mine were mostly like, we have a code for the trail, like 1, 2, 3, 1 meaning just walk, 3 meaning there's roots and stuff. And then we have this thing called bubbly rock where the trail's uneven. And then as I would look over my shoulder and just see where Richard was kind of stepping and how he was stepping, I got confident that his feet were going to take care of the terrain issues. At no point in time did I feel uncomfortable or see him, you know, getting into trouble. But occasionally we had, there were drop-offs.
Huge drop-offs, yeah.
Yeah. We don't want to get too close to that.
So you guys were not always connected, I take it?
No.
No.
Now, when I hike with Nancy, I'm always connected. Sensing her movement, as I indicated, gives me a good idea of what's coming up next and how big of a step I'll have to take and what kind of rocks are ahead and stuff.
I should also say that although I identify as blind, I do have some usable vision, or I consider myself low partial vision. With no vision in my left eye, I rely on what little I have in my right eye. So that's looking at contrast. I can know if I'm looking, you know, there's a paved road and then there's dirt to the left. If there's enough contrast, I can identify that. I don't have depth perception, so I can't tell you if there's a big step there, and there might be. And that's where Tom comes in saying, hey, there's a big drop off to your left. You may not see it with your depth perception. And if we go under a canopy of trees, it gets really dark, and then I don't have as much around me. So again, I function as a blind person, but I do have some contrast sensitivity. I know when it's night and daylight, I can look at my Apple Watch really up close to my eyeball and see the large print if I really focus, but it's not reliable, but I do have some functional vision. So sometimes Tom may have had a bright shirt on or something on his backpack where I can zone in on and go, okay, there's Tom, and I'm following the right person.
Once we got relaxed and the kind of the tension of it went down, the Camino became, I'd say, a lot more pleasant. And then the other thing that I was well aware of is that oftentimes Richard be maybe a yard off of my left shoulder, and I could hear his footsteps, and that gave me reassurance of knowing where he was. So I wasn't always looking over my shoulder. And I think one of the other lessons learned on that very first day is to not over cue. I run a joke in my own head where I was just telling him there was a bird here, there was a cow here, you know, and I'm sure at some point in time, Richard probably thought, yeah, I know, I can hear it.
Or smell the cow, or, you know, but yeah, no, it was, we worked out those little kinks, and we knew what would happen. We had a lot of grace and tact with that. And we'd have debriefs at the end of the day, Tom over a cup of coffee, me over a glass of wine. And, you know, every night we had our accommodation already established. So we knew that was a given.
So I understand at intervals along El Camino, there are hostels and other places where the various pilgrims stay and meet up in the evening. How did that work out?
I am not the best travel agent in the world, even though I've traveled a lot. But by chance, I found this thing called Camino Way, which was a travel agent kind of thing. And it turned out to be great. They transported our luggage from one hotel to the next, and all we had to do was walk to the next hotel. And on those routes, they gave us a lot of details about what we could encounter, you know, bar, whatever. And you couldn't get lost. There were arrows every, I don't know how many meters, you know, and then there were other people walking. So it just became easy. It was probably one of the easiest hikes I've ever done in terms of navigation.
Yeah.
And I take it you meet a lot of interesting people along the way that you hike along with sometimes as buddies, people from all around the world.
Oh, Costa Rica, Mexico, Argentina, Northern California, Colorado. Yeah, where else, Tom? Australia.
Yeah, and West Virginia. That guy still contacts me.
When you reached the end, how did you all celebrate?
With lots of aches and pains. No, I mean, we had amazing weather. We set foot on October 24th or 25th, and we had good, nice, cool weather. It was in the 50s and 60s, breezy. We didn't get rain, even though the area is known for rain that type of year, until the last 2 hours of our trip as we're coming in on, like, surface roads. You're in the city by that point. That last day is mostly city. And, you know, we had our rain gear and we stopped for lunch and we took our time and then we just came in. And the really cool thing is you run into people you talk to throughout the week on the similar journey, and some people stop and start at different times. But more often than not, you're running into the people who are on the path with you, and you're all giving each other hugs and high fives, just congratulating each other as you go and get your stamp and your, you know, your verification that you did that walk. And it's just neat. And you know, it's a tourist town. You're at the cathedral, you hear bagpipes play, there's vendors selling, you know, everything under the sun. But I think you're just so, like, happy but tired, but it rewarded that, hey, you know, I accomplished something that I set out to do.
And lots of other people in the same situation, I guess.
Yes.
Oh yeah. So I don't know if you know this, but when you do the Camino, you get what's called a passport. It's traditional, and as you're walking, you get stamps in it. And you have to have 2 stamps every day for your Camino to qualify for this, what they call the Compostela, which is a certificate in both Latin and Spanish that says you did it. A little bit of, I don't know, hype, but it's still cool. And we did that, and we presented it to the office, and it was cool. We got our plaques. The other thing is that it's traditional to have a shell that has a cross on the back of it. And I got that. And I think that you could see that, right, Richard?
I could, yes. That's right.
So there's all these kind of little traditional things. So when we ended, we got to the hotel and we did all this stuff. And then I just, because of my background, I just wanted to go to church. And Richard, I think you just stayed back and dried off, right?
Took a long hot shower.
So it's a very interesting cultural experience. I can just tell you that.
So for anybody else who's considering walking the El Camino del Santiago, what words of wisdom do you have for them?
If Tom doesn't say it, I'll say it. There's a saying that when we were kind of preparing for the trip that I read on a forum, you know, you don't walk the Camino walks you. And we all go for different reasons and for different experiences. Some are very spiritual. Some are just on vacation. Some just to meet other people. For me, it was just to clear my head during a very busy and transitional work time with my, you know, colleagues. So for me, it was just a break from all that to really clear my head and to really plan the next phase of my work. And it was great. And I guess the advice I'd give is be flexible with your agenda. Be flexible with those you are hiking with, because you may be fast and your hiking partner may be slow, or vice versa. So if you're going with a group, have the ability to really talk through things and set realistic expectations. If you have a sedentary lifestyle and you want to hike 10, 15 miles a day, be ready for that. Be ready for that stamina. Be ready to be hydrated and to have sores on your feet, and be prepared for those little emergencies that pop up.
The thing that I go with, and I learned this when I was actually climbing one of the 14ers in Colorado, I just happened to open a book, and it was the Buddha that says, you can't know the path until you become the path. And I think this was an opportunity for me to even live that even in a deeper way. It's also interesting for me that I live it much longer after we left Spain. It's still with me, and in different ways, you know, just it just comes up in ways that I didn't expect it to. So it is life-changing, I think.
I've heard that from other people who've walked the Camino.
Yes.
So if anybody who's listening does want to try this themselves, where would you send them to start getting information?
I would say that I have some files and things that I could give them. And I did find this place called the Camino Way, a very, very reliable source. And I would say the best thing to do here is to decide when you're going to go, talk to other people about it. And then I liked the idea that we had this support, so they carried our luggage from one place to the next and we had hotel reservations. I think it was just easier. I'm too old to just carry a 50-pound backpack along the way. And then I would say just do it. It's pretty accommodating. I would not do it in the summertime when it's 100 degrees out there. I think we picked a really good time, right, Richard?
And there's crowds of people in the summer. And you're right, Tom. Just do it, because you can. If I can overthink something and never do something, it's like Tom. I think Tom isn't so much on social media where I am. So I found Facebook forums, like reliable Facebook groups that really, the ones that were well established with thousands of people, good moderation, they give some good feedback. And I followed that forum for about 2-3 months prior to our trip, and it was very helpful. And I would, you know, pick out nuggets of, hey, this is useful, and then I would share that with Tom. We did research. I used ChatGPT, Tom used Google Maps, and then I would verify. I wouldn't just, you know, trust, but verify and make sure we're getting accurate information. And it really did align at the end there, and we would sit there and look at, and okay, can we do this? Yeah. And what is our out? And how do we get to safety if we get sick or injured, you know? And there's taxis everywhere. So, I mean, we did a lot of planning.
If anybody has a question for either of you, is there a way they can reach you guys?
My email, and this is Richard, is rueda94587@gmail.com.
And Tom?
It's T, D as in dog, LAIS54@gmail.com.
Every day had its own unique experiences. Every day we, you know, we woke up, we had our breakfast, and off we went at the crack of dawn, literally. And it was just refreshing to be out there with no agenda other than just to have coffee, have a bathroom break, and then walk miles on end and up and down hills through different environments, around animals, around people, through trees, through just, you know, you go through like roads where people live right there and you see them hanging up their clothing and just living their lives.
Right. And I got to give Richard a lot of slaps on the back because he got me going. I wasn't jumping up and down to do anything, you know, but now I'm much more excited about doing things.
And if you missed any of that information in the audio, you can always find it in the show notes for each episode. And this is episode 2615.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about low vision optometry. And we know we've spoken about this issue several times in the past, but it is very important. These people can work magic in terms of helping you improve your daily life in spite of whatever ophthalmological diagnosis you may have gotten. We'll be speaking with Cade Ost and David Simpson from the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Center about what they do as low vision specialists.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, available wherever you get your podcasts.
For show notes, resources, and more information, visit our website at eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, I'm Peter Torpy.
And I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy. Thank you for listening.